Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 209.
This week on the podcast, thanks to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, we're starting to worry that all of our conspiracy theories are true.
And a physically indistinct white man will remain VP for the rest of time.
Plus a billionaire corporation will endorse Clinton at the DNC and every day after.
And it looks like superdelegates will be losing their cape.
Plus nobody should be dancing at the RNC.
And Trump is the magic wand presenting the Grand Wizard with his next victims.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
And you can finally find us back on a podcast, too.
In the same room
together. I know, that was a little sleepy, our last podcast, because it was an important week, and we felt like
we had to do it.
But then it was like midnight where I was, and right. Brent had been at work late, and it was chaos,
a Monday.
You guys. It was chaos.
It wasn't great. But
this
here we
week
are.
Is... It's going to be great because it's got to be because it's all the news.
Yeah.
Because we didn't talk last week, we didn't cover a lot of the leading up to the RNC news.
Yes.
This week we have to cover the leading up to the DNC news and the RNC has already happened news and the news of how many new black men have been shot by the police and
So much news.
News like that.
Yeah.
So we're beginning with some breaking news.
Yes.
Because now we're breaking news, people.
Yeah.
One day a week, we get the chance to break news.
I know.
And it's today.
It's today.
So good luck to us. Yeah. There's almost never new news on Sunday.
And today,
here we are.
The best breaking news, too.
The best breaking news.
Yeah.
And it's been an evolving story all day. So hopefully it hasn't reversed itself by the time this podcast comes out.
Yeah.
But Debbie Wasserman Schultz is stepping down.
Sayonara.
Sayonara Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She's going to remain the head of the DNC until the end of the convention, which is Thursday. So she's stepping down Thursday. She was initially told by the Rules Committee, I think it was, that she was not going to be getting her speaking slot. Then she kind of negotiated with them, I think, because she wants to speak for some reason. I guess she loves being booed by huge crowds. People close to her have been interviewed and have said that she honestly doesn't understand what she's walking into.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't realize how angry the Sanders people are at her. And
There are other people mad at her,
There are other people mad at her, too. But just having 47% of your delegates angry at you is not a good time to make a speech anywhere.
No.
I mean, Ted Cruz, as we're going to discuss, got booed at the RNC. He had far fewer than 47% of the delegates there.
Totally.
Far, far, far fewer.
Yeah.
So many fewer.
Yeah.
But so now Debbie Wasserman Schultz is going to gavel in the convention. She's going to deliver a few remarks that will likely get booed.
Yes.
Her Ted Cruz moment. And then she's going to gavel it closed, but otherwise she's not going to be involved. Marcia Fudge is going to chair the convention. She's
Marcia
a representative
Fudge.
From Ohio whose name is Fudge. that was ratified by the Rules Committee on Saturday night.
Yep.
And then Donna Brazile is going to be appointed to the position pending a party vote during the convention.
Yeah.
She'll just serve till the end of the term, which is the end of this year, and then I guess they'll figure out what
she's already been.
Right. She was briefly the chair in 2011. She's now a pundit on CNN.
Yeah.
I think people thought, you know, she's a longtime friend of the Clintons, but I think people thought that she would be kind of like a professional and yet non-controversial force because, you know, for the most part, her punditry at CNN has been fairly, not even handed necessarily in this race because she had a clear horse in it.
Right.
But she's generally a respected pundit.
Right. She's tried.
And she is somebody that Democrats as a whole often look to for analysis.
Yes.
So I think that it will be a less controversial pick. And also, I think she probably is a person who can learn using her eyes and ears,
yes,
that acting as Debbie Wasserman Schultz did is not the way to endear yourself to millions of Democratic
right.
voters.
Yeah.
The reason this happened all of a sudden,
yes,
is not because Debbie Wasserman Schultz just came to her senses and thought, you know what, I'm a divisive force here and we want to have a unified convention.
No.
I should step down.
Some shit went down.
It's because WikiLeaks released their email trove from the DNC and found
their second batch,
right.
But this one was
damning.
More crazy.
Yeah, they found that they gave credence to the Sanders wing, what was being considered a conspiracy theory, but is in fact the definitive truth of what happened, that the DNC was in it for Clinton from
right.
the get-go.
And so many people I have talked to who are Hillary supporters have talked about this in a way where they're, like, previously to now, they're like, oh, you know, this isn't happening.
Right.
You
this know, is silly. Like, this doesn't hold water.
Yeah, exactly. So here we are. We now have proof.
It's happening, and it held water.
Yes.
Also, I don't know how you could have eyes and not see that this was happening. I mean, it was so obviously happening.
It was obviously happening.
And, like, the amount of obviousness of it happening was almost too obvious. It almost seems
maybe
like
that's
Sanders,
why she didn't know.
It almost seems like Sanders people should have been the ones to be like, this couldn't be happening, because it was, like, too obvious to be actually happening.
Yeah.
In any case, the email trove includes correspondence in which Debbie Wasserman Schultz refers to Jeff Weaver, Sanders' campaign manager, as a damn liar and an ass.
Yep.
She says in it that that Sanders has, quote, never been a member of the Democratic Party and has no understanding of what we do, which is apparently be proponents of Reagan-era economic policy. Yep.
There were also some emails that discussed going after Sanders over his religion.
Right. Well, so one of the things that's really concerning about these emails, because Sanders had been out to get her from the beginning because the debate schedule was so flawed, because it was clear that the DNC was already kind of not taking him seriously.
Right.
Part of the reason he ran was to draw attention to this issue.
Yes.
But so a lot of, some of these are just in response to times that the Sanders campaign called her out on other things that she was doing that felt partisan but aren't referred to in these emails.
Right.
But there are emails where the DNC staff suggest attack tactics against Sanders, including one where they use his religion. This smelled very much like the time the Clintons started race baiting on the, you know, when they were running against Obama.
Yep.
And now pretend that didn't happen.
Right.
but it was a really bad look for them.
Yeah.
And it a bad enough look that Sanders had to come forward and address it.
Yeah.
So critics of the sort of the fallout of this say that nothing in the email trails is inappropriate in the sense that it came out of nowhere. Like, a lot of it is her responding to the Sanders campaign, calling out the DNC.
Yeah.
But they're calling out the DNC for things that were legitimately considered, you know, were legitimately supposed to favor Clinton.
Right, exactly.
And now we have proof that on the back end, they were continuing to
do this.
To
yes,
do that.
With Debbie Wasserman Schultz and also this guy.
Yeah, and the CFO, Brad Marshall, who's also being called upon to resign. He has not resigned yet, but he's got some shit going in these emails as well. There's also the fact that Debbie Wasserman Schultz's primary opponent, Tim Canova, searched his name in the email trove and found that he was mentioned in 70 emails and said that essentially it looked like the DNC staff was acting as though they were her, like, personal campaign staff.
Campaign arm, right.
So he's considering maybe that he thinks she might have violated some campaign finance laws and is considering going after her on that charge, which will be interesting.
Go for it.
I've
already gotten an email from him. Today.
I have two. I know.
Yeah.
I have two. So we were already off to a rough start today, but we were off to a rough start already because prior to this, and one of the reasons this is so impactful today, is that yesterday Hillary announced her VP pick.
That's right.
And it is.
God, that was just yesterday.
It feels like a lifetime ago, mostly because it's been a full day of me getting into angry Facebook wars with people that I don't necessarily trust or care about the political judgment of, but I just, like, I am someone who, you know, normally doesn't get caught in, like, long Facebook comment wars.
Right.
I tend to stay away from, I tweet angry tweets sometimes.
Yeah.
But I tend to not get, you know, you don't see my Facebook wall and think, what the hell has she been up to?
Right.
I currently have a post up about this that has something like 30 comments and 15 of them are me.
Right.
Angrily replying to people.
Yeah.
Because I am not happy about her choice.
No, I'm not happy about this either.
So Hillary was waited until the very end of the day on Friday.
Right.
To tweet this pick. We knew that Tim Kaine was a possibility. People were starting to kind of coalesce around this idea.
Right.
But those of us who have brains and hearts were hoping that she would maybe try to pick someone that felt a little more olive branchy to the progressive wing of the party, which currently will have 47% of the delegates at her convention.
It could have been either
Perez.
Tom Perez.
Elizabeth Warren.
But, I mean, we thought that probably wasn't going to happen. But
the,
like,
thing is, the thing that everyone always talks about as being Kane's primary attribute is that he speaks Spanish. But, like, there are, first of all, I have one issue with that, which is that it's great that he speaks a foreign language. Good for him. Good for anyone who speaks a foreign language.
Yeah.
You're doing a great thing. You can learn more easily about other cultures.
Yeah.
speaking Spanish does not give you the experience of being a Latino person in America, though. That's true. It just gives you the experience of being a Spanish-speaking white person.
Yes.
And
I will say that he learned to speak Spanish
in Honduras on a mission trip.
I know. I'm just...
Mission trip.
I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Don't play devil's advocate with me. I know exactly what you're doing. But in any case...
I'm
going
to do it in a little bit again, too.
No, but I mean, like, the idea that a candidate who's Latino is no advantage if they don't speak Spanish. The Castro brothers don't speak great Spanish. Right. That's always considered their major detriment, as if they're not... And I think they're unqualified for other reasons, but it is sincerely... I sincerely do not think the reason that the Castro brothers are not qualified is because they don't speak Spanish.
Right.
They have the experience of being Latino in America.
Yeah, they're the reason that they're not great candidates is because they're boring.
They're boring, and they don't have that much experience doing other things.
Yeah.
But that's not a... I was reading something about how this sort of double standard of, like, white men get lauded for speaking a foreign language as if they've overcome, overcome some great hurdle. And then, like, a Latino person who doesn't speak perfect Spanish is considered, like, a major liability to your ticket. Because, God forbid. And, like, I get it. I think it's funny that Ted Cruz doesn't speak Spanish also, you know?
Sure.
Fine.
Yeah.
That said, I don't think that it's like, if your main qualification for outreach is that you have a very, very white person who speaks Spanish, like, think again.
Sure.
In any case, he's the 1990s version of a safe bet.
Yes.
Which is why I'm kind of like, I kind of feel like in 1993, this would have been a savvy political choice.
Sure.
We were coming out of the Reagan era. Yeah. We had a one-term, you know, Bush president that wasn't that popular, but we were kind of in a centrist, you know, situation. Yeah. We'd had a recession, but for some reason, no one was blaming it on Reagan, even though it was very clearly his fault. Like, this was like a savvy choice for a nation that was not in the midst of a giant populist uprising and was just hoping to continue on with a little bit less Reagan-y, you know, nonsense.
She picked the exact wrong person for the exact...
For 2016.
For 2016.
Couldn't be worse. Because of a lot of reasons, and I'm about to go on a long rant, so get excited about that. Mm-hmm. I've actually labeled it Lila's diatribe in our notes. But we should just say... And Kane, by the way, by all accounts, is a very nice guy.
Yes.
I don't particularly care if my politicians are nice. I would rather have them be effective.
Yeah.
I'm an Anthony Weiner apologist for that reason, and I'm not sorry. But he is for the TPP. One of the conditions of him joining the ticket was that he renounced his support of the TPP.
Right.
The problem was that he last unrenounced it Thursday.
Thursday,
so
he
knew he was being vetted for this position.
And he had voted for the fast track.
He voted for fast track. He has... come out openly talking about his support of the TPP as recently as Thursday, knowing that he was the front runner for this position and being vetted.
Right.
And still thought that was a good idea.
And also wrote a letter
to Janet Yellen.
About
encouraging
them
deregulation. Her to deregulate small to medium sized banks.
I mean,
which we shouldn't
don't be doing that.
But I mean, that's another issue. These are the two issues that the Sanders coalition kind of coalesced around.
Right.
And so to pick a guy who's just
and
like,
breaking up the big banks.
Fuck you guys to the coalition that's going to be 47% of your delegates at this convention just doesn't seem wise. He also is, he was an advocate of offshore drilling off the coast of Virginia. He's got a shady past on abortion. Now, he has a good score from Planned Parenthood.
Right.
But as I noted to everyone on Facebook who got involved in a war with me, Hillary Clinton has a perfect score as well.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have a perfect score in Lila's ratings of who's good on abortion. She has a murky score because she's in favor of restricting late-term abortions. And I have said on this podcast, and I'm just going to quickly say again, that means that you don't understand the basic issue at stake here, which is that women, not the government, should have a decision to make about what happens to... should have the only decision to make about what happens to their body. If you are a lunatic person who wants to have a third-term abortion, we should maybe try to counsel you out of it. We should we should let you know that it's a major medical procedure and it's going to be very expensive and not necessarily good for your own health.
Right.
But we are not necessarily in a position to decide whether or not you, a person who's carrying a baby, get to decide what to do with that fetus that is not viable.
Right.
You know? In any case, Tim Kaine is a Catholic. So he is personally against abortion. He has in the past been against abortion policy-wise. He is now pro-choice.
Yep.
He has I'm currently a little angry at Planned Parenthood because Cecile Richards has been She was out there for Hillary even after that Fox News thing where the Fox News town hall where we learned that Hillary was not as absolutist on abortion as Bernie Sanders was.
They were a little not as into this.
They're not as into this. Well, and there are other people in the women's reproductive health community who are like, we're not taking excuses anymore. We're not making any more excuses for this.
Yeah.
Like, this is not really an acceptable choice.
Yeah.
So, in any case, from the perspective of people who would have been in the tent as in an ideal world,
yeah,
we're not into this.
No.
But we also think, you know, it's a snub of the left wing of the party. And maybe in a year where the left wing got 5%, 10%, 15% of the vote, she could get away with that. Going after the middle might be a smart idea in that year. Let's talk for a moment about the landscape here right now.
Yeah.
Because our Republican nominee, as we never get tired of hearing, is a lunatic fringe person who is not capturing the middle. If you are a centrist voter who believes in these sort of corporatist core principles, Hillary Clinton is the only choice for you.
Right.
If you are a Reagan Republican or a Reagan Democrat, Hillary Clinton is the only choice for you.
I also think that because of this choice with Kane, who has sort of a, you know, has this past on the TPP, and Hillary Clinton has this past on the TPP, and you know, the Bernie people were running against the TPP, and Trump is running against the TPP.
I know,
so I feel
this
like
this has created a confusing situation for white men in Rust Belt states who have no other issue to vote on but the economy because they're white, so they're not voting on race
and
issues. And they don't care about women because they're men.
And those are in big battleground states, too. They're in Ohio, they're in Wisconsin, they're in Pennsylvania.
These are the people Kane was supposed to help her with. That's why she would choose a centrist white man for the ticket.
Yeah, and I just don't think he does it.
This is not the year that that works.
He doesn't do it.
And those voters, by the way, so this is related to my rant. Because one of the things that I wanted to talk about in my rant is the fact that those centrist voters are not the same centrist voters that you would find in a traditional year. So the voters that are in play for Clinton are traditional Republican voters. They're not Trump emotional voters.
Right.
Trump emotional voters, if you are a voter who's voting against Clinton, you're not going to vote for Clinton. That's simple math.
And
if you're a voter who's voting for Trump over some vague nonsense policy that he's promised, then you're in play. And if you're in play, the policy that you are voting for him because of is A, either some sort of law and order nonsense, in which case you're kind of a racist and you're probably not going to vote for a woman anyway.
Yep.
Or B, trade issues like the TPP, where you could be in play if Hillary Clinton was not obviously the person who wrote the TPP and then hadn't appointed a running mate who until Thursday was avidly supporting it.
Like, I know, right? I mean, you and I talked months and months ago at the beginning
of podcast.
At the beginning of this. At the beginning of this cycle, we said that there is a good chance that the Democrats could lose labor or some labor anyway, because
they did in the primaries. There was huge Trump support in labor among labor. And it's because a corporatist Democrat like Hillary Clinton does not represent union issues well. So there's not a reason to vote for her other than like a defensive issue. Okay. And then B, there's issues like the TPP where she is just not on the side of the working class.
Yeah.
So this is where my rant begins. My rant starts with one thing, which is...
Oh, it hasn't began yet.
It hasn't begun yet.
Okay.
Sorry. That was the preamble to my rant. I want to say one thing first, which is that this rant is distinct from my personal vote.
Right.
I've been clear since 2013 and beyond that I won't be voting for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
I intend to not vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
I live in California.
You were never going to.
It's not a controversial choice. I'm going to vote Democrats down ticket. The reason you want me to show up at the polls is not to vote for Hillary Clinton, but to make sure that our senator and our congressman stay in place and that our local government is Democratic. And I consider myself a loyal Democrat, and I'm going to go and vote for those things. This rant is outside of my personal vote. My vote was never in play. My vote is lost. I'm not, Hillary Clinton had made a really wild choice, unless Bernie Sanders was her running mate, I wasn't going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Because it wasn't, your vote doesn't count here.
My vote doesn't count here. And also, I feel like if you live in a state where your vote doesn't count, you should exercise your right to make a vote that you can feel good about.
Yep.
You know? Because that's what you get for not having anyone care about your state. That's what you get for seeing no campaign ads, not having a single rally, not ever meeting the candidates, and then also on top of that, not having them ever address any issue that has to do with your state.
And also,
you get to vote for whoever you want.
Yes. Because the Democrats are going to win.
The Democrats are going to win.
Yeah.
So, and to be clear, I can hold both the thought in my head that I disagree with Clinton on the issues tremendously, and not issues like Benghazi, issues like interventionist foreign policy, issues like Wall Street, issues like the TPP that I am not fully convinced that she's renouncing. I can agree with her on economic policy. I mean, disagree with her on economic policy and foreign policy. And those are the reasons I vote against her. And it's not all these dumb scandals. I don't care about her emails. I don't care about Benghazi. I don't care about any of that. I can also at the same time hold in my head the sense that Donald Trump is a unique threat to democracy.
Right.
And someone that I absolutely don't think should be the president.
Oh, yeah. I have
These
often...
are two... It's like how Black Lives Matter keeps getting blamed for police shootings as if... Like, they are advocating that the police stop shooting unarmed Black people.
Yes, correct.
That is not the equivalent of advocating that people shoot the police.
People shoot the police. Right.
They have never said that people should shoot the police.
No, they should not.
So that's... We should be able to hold the two thoughts in our head that there is currently frustration with the police and a rampant gun culture that's resulting in these very tragic police shootings.
Yeah.
We had another one this in the last few weeks. And then also that police are using poor judgment in terms of, you know, how they operate around and deal with minority, you know, non-criminals and criminals too. But I mean, like, and that is, these are two distinct problems. We can hold them both in our head at the same time. So before I begin, because I feel like a lot of arguments about this issue seem to begin with my vote. And so I want to just take my vote off the table. It's not in play. I'm not voting for Hillary Clinton. I never will. I still don't want Donald Trump to be the president. One of the things that I don't think Hillary Clinton does well, and one of the reasons I didn't support her in the primary, is that I don't think that she strategically delivers. I think that her campaign strategically makes blunders like I'm about to describe that make it impossible for people to be excited about them, that make it impossible for them to drive turnout, make it impossible for them to get elected. So regarding Kane, that's where my concern comes from. It's a strategic concern that has nothing to do with my own vote. My own vote is out of play. I am hearing so much scaremongering among the Democrats that it makes me want to poke both of my eyes out and then also put my head in someone else's head so that they can know the thoughts that I have instead of their own. Because this idea that a vote for Clinton, a vote not for Clinton, is a vote for Trump is
so
wildly simplistic and bushy in its with you're either with us or against us tone that, listen, if that's how you feel, then I would suggest that you have a largely simplistic view of how politics work and apparently don't care about how democratic democracy is.
Right.
However, I think that more important to you is the idea that it massively discourages turnout. Voting against something instead of for something discourages turnout. That is why Barack Obama, who was a nobody in 2008, was able to beat Hillary Clinton in a primary that she was the inevitable winner of.
Right.
It is because he was offering something that she was not offering, which was something to vote for. And that for was literally just hope.
Hope. Right.
It was just an optimism.
It was.
It was literally just offering us
hope
the chance, the fact that maybe things would be better.
Yeah.
Not that we were defensively voting to prevent things from getting worse, but the idea that he might actively try to make things better. And she didn't have that message, and she still doesn't have that message. So the with us or against us bullshit is a Bush-era America nonsense talking point that I think does more to discourage young voter turnout because we were raised in that era of fear-mongering nonsense and we see through it really fast than it does to help. So, instead of patronizing the left, what the Democrats need to figure out is how they can make it so that Democrats, like, not like myself, but Democrats of the same ideology as me, want to vote for the Democrats.
Correct.
Not against the Democrats, but for
the
Democrats.
Not against the Republicans.
I mean, not against the Republicans. Not against Trump. Because if you are 25 and this is your first vote, then you're just going to be like, fuck it, maybe I don't vote then. Because the idea that you can't vote on any of your principles because your only ability to make a, you know, to have a say is to
vote
against a madman is insane. So scaremongering votes from anti-corporate, anti-free trade, actually pro-choice young people and robbing them of any hopeful, exciting reason to vote is not going to be effective.
It.
It's going to alienate them. It's going to make it so that down-ticket candidates don't get the turnout they need.
Yep.
It's going to make it so that the 50-state strategy that could have worked really well in this election will not be viable.
Yep.
Michael Moore had a post about this. It's very dramatically titled, Donald Trump Will Be the President, or something like that.
Yeah.
Michael
Moore's
being
it's
really
like
dramatic.
Five reasons why.
Right. But he made the point that I think I've been trying to make this whole time, but that people aren't listening because they get so wrapped up in my vote, which is, again, off the table. It is that young people, new people in the process, old people who are kind of in the process but not super into the process, will be uninspired. And that those uninspired voters might go to the polls, Sanders voters are going to go vote for Clinton.
Yeah.
For the most part, polls are showing that Sanders voters are going to turn up for Clinton.
Right.
But they're not going to bring five friends with them. They're not going to volunteer.
Right.
They're not going to donate money. They won't have any exciting or inspiring argument to tell their friends and the people around them why they're voting the way they are. And that's going to suppress all of the sort of ancillary benefits of having an exciting, inspiring
candidate.
That's the
thing. I mean, even in 2012, like you said, you and I didn't really particularly care for Obama. I mean, in terms of
policy wise, we're not really on the same page as him.
Right. But we went and made calls.
Yeah. I try to always go and make calls if I can. And on top of that, there's just like with the Sanders campaign, I saw tons of people that I've never talked about politics with ever who know that I'm into politics.
Yeah.
So I assume that they, if they were previously into it, they would have joined one of my many rants about politics. But who got so invested in the Sanders campaign that they went to Nevada, they went to New Mexico, they went to all of these other states, they made phone calls, they donated money, they were talking to their friends about it, they were posting up a storm on Facebook, it was starting to get annoying. Like, that's the kind of energy that Obama had, because it was really, really exciting to see a young black man who was offering us the opportunity to maybe think optimistically, even if it was crazy, run for president.
Yeah, we don't have that here.
We don't have that here. No. We don't, and running Tim Kaine sort of seals the deal, because we could have had that here if she had appointed a VP or if she had chosen a running mate who could have helped marshal that kind of excitement.
So she doesn't want
because
it.
The excitement was there.
Yeah.
You know, Sanders set up this whole organization that she could have taken advantage of. And now she's just given the finger to that organization. And that organization might not dissipate, but it's going to just become a thorn in her side. It's not going to become helpful to her.
No, it's not.
You know, and so in any case, the reason that I'm upset here, strategically, this makes it feel like Clinton doesn't fucking want to win.
Right, she doesn't, yeah.
Which is the problem we had with her from the beginning, is she doesn't seem equipped to win or to want to win. And it's,
I think she wants to, but
I don't think anyone around her seems, well, you know, they, when they announced Tim Kaine as a pick, there were a lot of Sanders surrogates that went on the news. They had not contacted Ben Jealous, even to sort of read him on what he thought of this. They had not contacted Nina Turner. None of these people had even been contacted by the Sanders people. They literally shut out that whole 47% of their party.
Yeah.
And if that's the if the case is that this is the most important election in the history of the universe and the world's going to end if Donald Trump is the president, has no one told her how important it is?
I know.
I keep getting told that as if my vote personally is going to make Donald Trump the president.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like anyone is telling
her.
That.
Right.
Yeah. And her surrogates seem aware because they're going around pre-blaming progressives for the loss of Hillary Clinton that they could have prevented if they had tried even
just
a little to seem
to
like
out to them.
They wanted progressives to vote for them.
Yeah.
So it reads to progressives that Clinton saw that there was this excitement during the primary, that she wanted to squash it because she doesn't want to address the concerns of progressives. She and not only, I mean, she never had any intention of doing that.
No.
But now she's sort of laying down the law that she won't even be listening.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, that only makes the argument that there's just not room in the tent for us.
Right.
And if there's not room in the tent for us, if there's not room in the tent for 47% of the Democratic Party, then we have a third party situation.
Agreed.
That's, I have considered myself a loyal Democrat this whole time. I have always voted Democratic. I have worked for the Democrats. I care about Democratic causes. If what the Democrats stand for is only this corporatist version of what, you know, of the platform, then I'm not a Democrat. There's not room for me in the party. And as much as I've always said I would never vote for Clinton, and Brent left.
I changed my...
Brent left the party.
I'm a no party preference.
Yeah.
Voter.
I mean, exactly. No. So that just doesn't seem, from a sort of longevity point of view, like a strategically sound move. Even if she doesn't want to deal with the thorn of having annoying progressive voters nagging at her for 4 years.
Yes.
It just, it seems like it shoots, which is what the Clintons have always done. It shoots the party in the foot in the long run to save them in the short run.
Yep.
As one of my friends suggested, it sort of seems like she thought she would have just enough of a margin to win without the progressives, and so she didn't want to include them because she didn't want to talk to them.
Yeah.
And that's
that could be.
That could be, but then
the
I don't want to hear from them that it's my fault when Donald Trump is the president, you know?
Yep.
And I don't think that it's fair to demand absolute loyalty from me when my suggestions are clearly aimed at
broadening
the tent.
Yes, exactly.
At broadening the turnout. I want to see them
of course
get turnout.
Yes.
And it's not like on me to call every voter in America to tell them that they should vote because I'm not excited about this candidate either. And I'm not voting for her. But it should be their prerogative to broaden the tent.
Yeah.
We saw this in 2000.
And they're choosing to not.
If I hear one more talking point about fucking Nader.
Ralph Nader.
Losing that election for Al Gore, who chose an actual Republican as his running mate. Lieberman became a Republican.
Yep.
Who no person could get excited about, who no one wanted to be inspired by, because that was not just voting sort of as a compromise. You know, I voted for Obama compromising some of my principles, but it was worth it.
Yeah.
It was, it wouldn't have been worth it to vote for Lieberman.
No.
That was not, that was voting for a Republican. That was not the same thing.
Right.
So, like, I don't want to hear that conversation happen again. If Clinton loses this, she is the one who's to
blame.
I have
been really taking to the streets, sticking up for Ralph Nader.
I know.
This year, and I...
Brent and I are, like, on a real Ralph Nader. And Brent was not initially on board with this talking point, like, years ago.
No, I was not. And I also, I didn't vote for him.
No. Well...
I voted for Gore.
That's, I mean, like, that, you know... That, I think, is something that we couldn't also have known in retrospect would become this, like, sort of talking point about
this,
the 2000 election.
This boogeyman,
as if,
Ralph
Nader's, wasn't the fact that Al Gore literally did get more votes in Florida than George Bush and failed
and
to win a court
case.
And
throughout the country.
And throughout the country.
And then also didn't win his own home state.
Didn't win his home state because he was that exciting. And then failed to challenge a court decision about who became the president.
Yeah. So that's Al Gore for
That's
you.
Al Gore for you. And that's... why we're that's why we're concerned. The Clintons have been famously losing elections.
Right.
I mean, the Clinton wing of the party has lost some real zinger elections.
Yeah. Now, if you're wondering after what happened with this email situation and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and all of that, if you're wondering if Sanders has dropped his support of Hillary Clinton, he has not.
He has not. He's gotten markedly less sort of direct about his support, though.
They asked him about it on Meet the Press, and he said, no, no, no. We're going to do everything we can to protect working families in this country. What a campaign is about is not about Hillary Clinton.
Incorrect.
It's not, right. It's not about Donald Trump. It's about the people of this country.
And that's where I would say that she's proven us wrong. But I feel like, I think he might just run a shadow campaign against Donald Trump that never references Hillary Clinton.
Well, I think
because he has to. She's put him in a really tough spot.
Yeah.
You know, financial regulation and... trade are the issues that he came into this race to advocate for, and they put Elizabeth Warren in a tough spot because she's been advocating for Clinton, and now she's the financial regulation guru.
Yeah,
she was the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
That's it.
Like, that's what she does.
Yeah,
and now they have to have her advocate for some idiot head who couldn't, you know, can't fall in line with what the actual members of the party think. Like, it's madness.
It's madness.
Some good news.
Some good news. Yeah, the Rules Committee. So the DNC is starting. As today, as you're listening to it.
Monday is the first big day. Right. Watch the speeches. Pay attention.
Yeah, exactly. And so the Rules Committee was meeting this weekend on Saturday, and they created a, quote, unity commission, which is going to study the rules of the superdelegates.
Yeah.
So that is awesome.
That's good news.
They were charged specifically with recommending that superdelegates who are not governors, senators, or members of the House would become pledged delegates, losing their power to vote independently of their state. So they're basically tied to their states.
Right. And to the, electoral outcome
of their vote. Yeah.
That would be a great start. I mean,
Any start would be a good start.
I think right now they're just trying to figure out how to appease the Sanders people enough so that there's not like an Occupy-style protest inside the hall.
Totally.
P.S. Do an Occupy-style protest inside
the hall.
That's
the ticket right there.
That's the answer. That's the one thing Democrats have that Republicans don't have, is Democrats are not afraid to protest each other.
No, they are not.
And in this situation, I think
this is a good time
to do it. I reject the notion that showing disunity at something like this somehow like damages the party.
No,
I think it only strengthens the party. It helps Hillary Clinton figure out how she needs to run to get these voters
on
board.
She's going to see what's going on.
She's
going
to see what's going on. It's clear she's not seeing what's going on right now.
She's definitely
I don't see this idea that like absolute unity is some sort of, you know, need at this stage. I don't think that's true.
I agree.
And it's a very dictatorial, you know, it's like in communist countries, only one person gets to run for office.
Right, totally.
And you have to agree with that person.
Right.
That's sort of what I feel like I'm being told here.
I agree.
Like, my options are to vote for an illegitimate person.
Right.
Or to
vote for two illegitimate people.
But I mean, like, my option is to vote for, like, the party or, like, an actual illegitimate person. Yeah. Like, Donald Trump isn't even, like, a legitimate person.
No, that's true.
So, like, my option, it's a one party. We're like in a communist race right now.
Yeah.
Except we don't have healthcare.
Right.
It's infuriating. In any case, other bad decisions being made by the DNC. Michael Bloomberg is getting a primetime speaking spot to endorse Hillary Clinton.
Yikes, guys.
You guys, enough with the corporatist nonsense.
This is her going after this man, going after the middle again.
And the middle is not there this year.
No, the middle right.
But she's this going man after the right, is going to get booed doing. At this convention.
I would assume so.
I mean, he's a Republican mayor.
That's right.
47% of the delegates in there are Sanders delegates.
Yeah.
I do not have time for this.
No.
Like, why are they fucking this up so badly?
I have no idea.
It's so frustrating.
What is he going to talk about? Is he going to talk about, like...
Guns, I guess. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. He can't talk about unions. He can't talk about, you know, Wall Street. He can talk to them about Wall Street. He certainly can't talk to that hall about Wall Street.
Right.
I mean, like, he's going to talk about how he can't bring himself to endorse Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But it's like, only a lunatic could bring themselves to endorse Donald Trump. We're going to talk about the RNC in just one second.
A specific person who couldn't endorse Donald Trump.
Well, yeah, exactly. You'll know how lunatic-y you have to be to endorse Donald Trump. I mean, there was like some serious disunity at that convention.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we have the obligation to show a unified face if we're getting this bullshit pulled on us.
I agree.
I don't think there's ever a time and place for that kind of bullshit.
No.
So let's move on to the RNC, because I've ranted long enough.
This was fun.
Oh, my God.
The RNC.
Yeah, the RNC was real fun.
Yeah.
/ terrifying.
Well, definitely terrifying. So it started last week, which we didn't do a podcast on.
Right.
And Trump announced Mike Pence as his running mate.
And then unannounced his running mate.
Right.
And then re-announced his running mate. He kind of had second thoughts after announcing.
Yep.
Asked his advisors, I think, if he could take back the announcement. And they were like, no. And so he was like, oh, cool. Then Mike Pence is my running mate.
Here it is.
So it was a very confusing rollout.
He also asked if he could take back his logo.
And
he could take back his logo.
Thank God. Because the logo was obscene.
Yeah, it was not great.
If you are a person who hasn't seen the logo, I mean, get some Facebook friends, first of all. What are you doing? But also, find yourself Google that on Twitter, because there were many funny memes created out of that.
They also did a joint 60 Minutes interview like days later, and it was fascinating. You guys.
Also,
it was
awkward.
It was so great. It was really, really awkward. It was just Trump talking a lot over Pence.
And talking, blathering is what he was doing.
That's true.
Talking, that's he wasn't true. Like making profound points about the nature of human existence.
He never is.
He doesn't have the attention span to do that.
He can't do that.
And Pence sort of has a friendly smile.
Right.
So that's just what he does.
But there were, like, some very awkward moments, because they asked Trump about Pence's vote for the Iraq War.
Right.
Because he's really been running against Hillary Clinton on her vote for that. And there was that was really awkward.
We're in, like, a funny farm world, by the way. It's like the Republicans are running against the TPP in the Iraq War.
Wild.
And the Democrats are insisting stubbornly on running for both of those things. Right. Like, crazy. Their first appearance together is already just, like, hilariously...
It's not great.
It's not great. Yeah. Hilariously awkward.
Well, and
how are these two going to campaign together?
Their initial rollout was not great either.
No, it was also awkward.
So,
everything that we've seen collectively from those two has been reels awkward.
Yeah.
So that's the opening of the RNC.
Right.
How we get into the RNC. The RNC begins and ends as a complete bonkers town nonsense fest.
Totally.
There were constant cheers to jail Hillary Clinton.
And there were signs in the room.
Signs in the room. They handed out signs in the room. It's not like people brought signs.
And a lot of people...
They were signs that were made by the RNC.
A lot of people thought that was... Like,
that's over the top.
Super over the top. Yeah.
You guys.
And you were getting chants from the speakers.
They were scary chants.
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
Fascist-y chants.
Yeah,
it was like a very.
Lock her up.
A lot of fascism sounding stuff. I know. It's like, so, like, I'm not a Hillary Clinton fan. I just went on a diatribe about her for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I certainly don't think I could find myself in a crowd screaming that we should jail her.
I don't.
Like, I'm just, like, so, like, this is so, like,
yeah,
this sort
crazy.
Of character assassination element of this story is so bizarre and fascinating, because it's so ridiculously over the top and, like, over the most ridiculously minor thing. And I always assume that, like, who's buying this? Like, this is silly. But, like, this room full of people, this room full of Nazi youth was, or Nazi elderly, was buying it.
Yeah.
And so, in any case, they had bizarre speakers. It's a very sinister tone. Bizarre speakers.
Yes.
confirmation that the entire Trump family would be the most boring dinner guests you could ever imagine. Because I often try to think, like, when I see people get nominated and you see their families or whatever, like, whether they'd be kind of fun to have dinner with.
Yeah.
And there's many, many Republicans I think would be fun to have dinner with. Yeah. I think the McCains would be fun to have dinner with.
Totally.
Megan's there. John probably is grumpy and says silly things all the time. Yeah. And then you have to be like, Grandpa, or whatever. You know, like, Lindsey Graham was probably a funny storyteller.
Yep.
Do I disagree on most things? Of course. But I think he'd be fun to have dinner with. I think the Clintons would be fun to have dinner with. Yeah. They're lovely in person.
The Trump kids,
they look,
not so much.
They couldn't look like less friendly or interesting people. Like,
very true.
And so it's just,
and everybody loved them, though, too.
I know. It was so weird. But they look like, the boys looked like Richie Rich. They all had weird Richie Rich hair and suits. And they looked like the suits, like they were too young to wear the suits, but also too old to wear the suits. Like, too old for the hair and too young to wear the suits.
Yeah.
And the only one who had even a spark of personality was Tiffany. And that's because she was not raised by Donald or any of the Trump. She was raised by
Marla
Maples in Los Angeles. She doesn't even know them. So she's the only one who successfully humanized him, which is hilarious because she knows him the least.
Right.
And then there were, like, that amidst, and they were kind of sitting up above as if they were, like, on the royal throne of some sort.
Yeah.
The whole thing was sort of like a mix between a Klan rally and, like, a Nazi rally.
Totally.
It was, like, but very disorganized. So it was not a Nazi rally at all.
Because
I was sitting there the whole time being like, Hitler would have never allowed this to go on.
No.
Like, it was like if Hitler didn't have the genius for optics and organization that he did and was just a lunatic ranting.
Right.
Like, if you divorce Hitler of all the optics, he looks silly. Like, that's what this looked like.
Yeah.
They only had 18 black delegates. That's the fewest in, like, 20 to 30 years.
Well, there was the, did you see that tweet that Paul Ryan tweeted of
all the interns?
Of the all of
and
the
then
interns,
all the Democratic interns
white,
started doing
the
it.
And the Democrats did it, too. Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah, well, they don't even notice when they're in a room full of all white people.
They feel a sense of safety.
They feel at home, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But it was funny, though, because I think media was trying desperately not to sound, like, not to be accused of not giving everyone, you know, like, not fairly representing the room. Because for only 18 black delegates, they were certainly in every single shot.
Yes.
And I started counting.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't count higher than 18. I didn't find more than 18 black people there, but they were in every single shot. And I was kind of like, I can't figure out whether this just speaks to the Republican genius for tokenism.
Right.
Or whether, like, MSNBC is involved somehow.
Yeah.
Medea Benjamin, American hero, broke in twice. This from our Border Patrol party, by the way.
Yeah.
We're going to build a wall to keep Mexicans out, but
we can't keep Medea Benjamin
out of the fucking convention. Medea Benjamin interrupts Donald Trump's speech in the most genius moment.
Yeah.
She's
a hero.
She literally, if there is, like, if we needed to get hostages out of a closed nation, if North Korea had hostages that we needed to get home, like, that's who I'd fucking
send.
She can get tickets to anything.
Yeah.
She'll be at the DNC, too. They're going to be everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's hilarious that she had gotten kicked out for protesting once on the second day and somehow got back in on the fourth day during Donald Trump's speech and had the same thing happen. And not only that, she said that while she was in there, because I read an interview with her, that a congressman came over and said hello to her, and people were, like, winking at her. Like, people knew who she was.
Right.
And so the reporter asked, like, why do you think they let you stay?
Yeah.
And she was like, none of them like Trump. Everyone's really uncomfortable.
Right. Well, and what was so funny, too, was I think that the I think what she was holding, I think, said
build bridges, not walls.
Yeah, and I think one day somebody had, like, a no racism, no hate sign, too,
yeah,
I think.
No, Code Pink broke in the third day, too.
Oh, yeah.
Pink got in three times. Medea got in twice of the three.
How do you rip that out of somebody's hand?
Like, they couldn't keep protesters out of there to save their lives.
Yeah.
And she literally, the way she got the tickets was by tweeting, I need tickets to the RNC for tomorrow. Anyone? That's how she got them.
It's amazing.
The most important moment of the convention that will be remembered by the history books
is
when Melania's speech turned out to be plagiarized partially from Michelle Obama's speech. And the aftermath of this is more hilarious than the actual happening.
Yeah.
Because Melania's speech was sort of unintelligible anyway.
Right.
And, like, also,
well, English is her second language.
Right. But she also just, like, is not a political person.
No.
So, like, it didn't matter what she said,
right,
ultimately. She's not like Michelle Obama, who's, like, a delight and, like, an intelligent person in her own right.
Sure.
And, like, also an intellectual.
Yes.
A professional intellectual sort.
Like,
Melania is, like, arm candy for, like, a rich billionaire.
Yeah.
So, like, her speech, I was kind of wondering what dress she would wear, but I wasn't really thinking I'd have to listen to it. In any case, turns out it's plagiarized. Trump play the blame game all week. So, like, at first, it's, like, the speechwriters. But then Melania's like, no, I wrote it. It's my fault.
Well, she had said that she had written it before.
Right. And then
she gave it.
It turned out, then someone came out and said they'd written it, but then she said that she rewrote it. Then it gets blamed on a mysterious Trump Organization staffer named Meredith McIver.
Yes.
Which would be great. Who she pens a letter to Donald Trump apologizing.
Right. She has supposedly ghostwritten some of his books.
Right.
But no one can find her.
No one can find her. It's probably because she's not really real. Right. Here are some thoughts on why.
Because Donald Trump has done this before.
Donald Trump has done this before. She had no social media presence until a few days before the news broke that she was responsible.
Right.
She's not listed in the campaign payroll, which also makes it illegal for her to be working for the campaign. But okay. There's only two available images of her as an adult. And they both seem to have been photoshopped into photos with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Plus, this is not the first time Trump has made up
He made up himself.
He made up a PR rep for himself, right, where he gave an interview in the 90s to People magazine. There's a clip that we posted a few days ago online about this. It was actually him.
Right.
They went and did speech recognition or something like that.
And it was definitely
him. But basically, it's like 11 minutes bragging about his exploits with women.
Yikes, guys.
Playing a character of a PR person who just came on to help the Trump Organization a little bit.
But anyway, that speech, the fallout of that speech was so amazing because there were so many memes and...
It overshadowed days worth of convention coverage.
Totally.
I mean, we didn't have to listen to most of what happened in day two or three.
No.
Because it was too hilarious because of this.
Yeah.
So, which is good because nobody wanted to go to this convention, by the way.
No, they did not.
Only four governors spoke.
Yes.
Mary Fallon spoke, Chris Christie spoke, Rick Scott and Scott Walker both spoke.
Yep.
I want to just take a moment to talk about Scott Walker's bald spot once again.
It's important that we do, because every time we talk about Scott Walker, we have to bring it up, and you can't not.
You can't not. This is a man who claims that he bumped his head, and that's why he has an enormous bald spot.
It's male pattern bald spot.
It's
spotting.
It's male pattern bald spotting. He has a bald spot in the spot that you get male pattern baldness, and then a receding hairline going to meet the spot that has the male pattern bald. Like, that's a pattern that male pattern baldness follows.
Yeah, he claims it's a bump. He got a bump
as a child on his head, and so he has a bald spot in the exact spot that male pattern baldness occurs.
That's not what happened.
That can't be it.
No.
And I want medical proof if it's not. Because this is a man who's lied about many things.
Tons.
But if he's not even going to be truthful about the bald spot on his head, I can't take him seriously.
I agree.
It's too infuriating.
Yeah. Kasich was not there.
Kasich, by the way, is turning into a mini American hero.
Right, who was the governor of the state this convention was in,
That
by
is
the way.
Very unusual that the governor would choose not to come. But Kasich also devoted the week to delivering anti-Trump speeches. Kasich is obviously not someone I agree with on any policy issues.
No, but he's killing it here.
He's killing it.
Yeah.
It turns out that Kasich is at least... There's people who I think, like, we just respectfully disagree on the issues.
Yeah.
Like, I think he is wrong on the issues, but I think his heart's in the right place. Like, he's trying. That's often how I feel about John Huntsman. You know, I feel like his heart's in the right place. Do we agree on everything? No.
No.
I'm sorry about that, because I think he's probably a nice guy.
Right.
Kasich's not a nice guy, but I think he's a guy who's trying.
Right.
You know, he's a guy who's trying to be moral.
He's trying.
He's trying to do the right thing.
Yep.
And the right thing to him is to make sure Donald Trump does not become the president.
That's right.
Meanwhile, Trump said on Meet the Press today that he would probably create a political action committee to fund opponents of Kasich, Cruz, and other people that are enemies of his.
Yikes.
So that's fun. Nikki Haley was on the floor of the convention and was asked by MSNBC whether she'll be voting for Trump and gave the world's least enthusiastic endorsement.
Yeah, it was really hilarious.
It was very awkward, too.
Yeah.
Where they're like, are you going to vote for him? And she kind of pretends not to hear them for a while. And finally, she says something like, well, he's the nominee of the party. Or something
She never
says, I'm going to vote for him. Yeah. She just, like, goes out of her way.
Well, I think she did say she was going to vote for him, but didn't, like, go, right? Or didn't
no,
or did she?
No, she
did
said
she not?
A roundabout thing that implied she was going to vote for him.
All right.
In any case, it was, like, nutbags galore over there, though.
Rudy Giuliani gave a crazy stemwinder of a speech. Like,
you guys,
that was, like, bonkers. And I watched this one. And it was...
I couldn't.
It was totally crazy.
I'm putting
town.
A moratorium on Giuliani in my life.
Right.
So I'm glad
you
watched
it. It was, like... It was nutso, and I don't even remember anything specifically about it, but Rachel Maddow called this the speech that happens every 4 years at one of the conventions.
Right.
Or sometimes both of the conventions.
Sure, sometimes.
That if you are in the hall, and you are there, and you are in it, then you are really freaking in it, because that is, like, really giving it to you.
Right.
Like, that was, like, one of those speeches.
Yeah, it was, like, a
but
real...
But if you are watching at home... As either a Democrat or perhaps a moderate
human.
Or any living human that's on your couch at home, it was like, holy.
It's like fucking moly. Crazy.
Right, exactly. She compared it to the Jennifer Granholm speech in 2012, which, like, you know, like, if you were
in the, yeah,
if that was your thing, then that was certainly your thing. But yeah, if that was not your thing, then Jennifer Granholm was batshit crazy.
Yeah.
So, like, she's right. Like, something yeah. like that always happens. And it was the Giuliani speech this year.
I need us to be over Giuliani. We're talking about a failed everything candidate. The only thing he hasn't failed at is being the mayor of New York City. But he's failed at running for every other kind of office.
Right.
He's a nobody.
Yeah.
Why would we need a nobody?
No, we wouldn't.
In the Republican National Convention. Yeah. Why allow a nobody into your lives?
I don't know.
He's a loser. Trump hates losers.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right.
It's like crazy.
Yeah.
Speaking of losers.
Chris Christie was also
Chris
there.
Chris Christie gave a speech that was mostly about how we should prosecute Hillary Clinton.
Right, because he's the prosecutor, of course.
Yeah,
right.
Obviously. But everybody remarked that no ethical prosecutor would think that a word of what he said was a thing to do.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz, though, delivered his speech.
This was the other best night of the week.
Got a lot of accolades from people just praising how ballsy he is. Because that was ballsy.
That was ballsy. And people thought maybe that he would do that.
Yeah.
But there was some lead up.
I think it was like Tim Kaine. We thought he might do it, but we also didn't think he would do it.
Right.
We didn't think he'd actually do it.
Right.
Because Ted Cruz did not endorse.
He gave a speech
at the DNC
right.
and did not endorse. And
then he said, vote your conscience.
He said, vote your conscience.
At the end. And like just roundly.
Well, but that was such a weird moment because Donald Trump, I think, knew that he was about to do that. So Donald Trump makes an appearance
makes
in the hall.
An entrance.
So everyone's focus shifts as he's about to say, vote your conscience.
Yeah.
Like you see in the hall, something's right. happening and everyone's kind of like moving around.
Yeah.
So there are cheers and boos happening right. and you can't figure out what's going on.
Right. And the New York delegation is in the front because that's
Trump's home state.
So he's
yeah.
got him up there. And so they, as soon as they realize that this is what he's doing, like go
ballistic
yeah, because they're like, what the hell is happening here?
Yeah.
But it was crazy.
It was great television.
Yeah, it was good TV.
yeah,
for sure. And it's sort of it totally overshadowed Pence, who spoke that night.
Yes.
He gave a decent speech.
Yeah, but that's I think it was David Frum, who is a Republican, who was talking. I was listening to him the next day be interviewed about this. And he's not a Trump guy. So
yeah.
He was going to be critical. But he was sort of like, you know, it was a very able speech. He kind of like stabilized the convention
yeah.
a little. Because things after
right.
that Ted Cruz speech were like nutty nuts
yeah.
in that room. And so he gave a very professional politician speech where you sort of felt comforted. Like even though you knew that everything he was saying was wrong,
right.
you felt comforted by the presence of a person who obviously understood
like,
political
knew
rhetoric
what he was
and like
right,
knew what
exactly.
he was doing.
Yeah.
And looked like he wasn't an axe murderer.
Right.
However, or Beelzebub himself.
Yeah.
But can you remember a single thing he said?
No, I cannot remember
a single thing
he said.
I mean, no. That was the
and
problem
it's
with it.
Because we would have been talking about it the next day, except we were talking about Ted Cruz.
But that's the thing. I don't think we would have been. I think
yeah.
that the problem with that speech was that it was very well done and
yeah.
comforting, but there was nothing memorable
right.
about it, and it went on so late.
Right. But I do think that it was interesting to have Cruz because supposedly the Trump campaign knew that they claimed that they knew that Cruz was going to do
yeah.
this like three or four
right.
days prior.
Right.
Now, 3 or 4 days prior maybe wouldn't have been early enough to change the convention speaking schedule.
I think
but,
they wanted him to do
but,
it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Because yeah. a lot of people were like, why didn't he do this on Monday?
I think that they wanted him to do that because Trump timed his entrance perfectly for it. It was a
yeah.
whole show.
Yeah.
And it was a show that allowed Trump to look like he had control of the crowd.
Right.
I think that was entirely intentional
perhaps.
On their part. I think Ted Cruz got more credit than maybe he deserved for playing into their hand.
Right.
Because I think that he didn't realize the part that he was playing in the show.
Yeah.
But I think that was entirely intentional.
All right. I'll buy
it. I don't have proof.
No.
But it was
who
just
can.
Donald Trump's entrance was so sort of like so like oddly perfect
yeah.
for the moment. It took the
right.
wind out of Ted Cruz's sails at the exact moment that he was about to
right.
get a boo, and then he disappeared right after
right.
that.
But also, supposedly, he was supposed to speak for 8 minutes, and he spoke for 23 minutes.
Yeah.
So there is also a chance that Trump came out just because he was supposed to be coming out.
No, because Trump's people knew, because we were watching behind-the-scenes cams the whole time on MSNBC. Trump arrived in the middle of the speech. It was timed. They knew
right.
what was going on.
All right, I'll buy it.
They knew the timing.
Okay.
And Another thing that we should mention about this was that Trump made an appearance every single night, which is very unusual.
It is.
And his initial appearance was like
crazy,
fucking WWE style entrance,
like silhouetted, like
silhouettes with like smoke in a. And his later speech was more flags than I've ever seen in one place in my life.
Sure. Yeah.
Too many flags, some might argue.
Mm-hmm. They had some Z-list celebrities.
A lot of Z-listers there. Scott Baio.
Yikes.
Came out
there. Who had caused a bit of a stir before the convention because he had tweeted out a picture of Hillary Clinton in front of a sign that said the word count, but her head was blocking the O, so it said cunt.
Yeah.
So that...
That was Scott Baio for
that
you.
That was Scott Baio.
Antonio Sabato Jr. gave a speech and then gave an interview right after saying that he's sure that Obama's a Muslim and, quote, with the bad guys.
Yeah. I think he said that in his speech.
No, he said it in the interview after, I think.
Oh, okay.
His speech was also not such great shakes.
Well,
but,
I'm not
And there was, like, a list of confusing... Like people who were involved in, like, pyramid scheme. Like, there were all sorts of questionable...
Oh, yeah,
an astronaut.
An astronaut.
Dana White, the head of the UFC.
Who also did not endorse, by the way. The astronaut.
The astronaut didn't either.
Because it was in her printed... Like, the released copy of her speech
had an endorsement,
and then she didn't deliver it on stage.
And then we get to the Trump family speeches.
Oh, boy.
So the kids, as we said, all look like Richie Rich.
Right.
Donald and Eric, the two boys, deliver speeches that are largely about policy, which is interesting, because usually the kids come out and, like, tell fun stories about their dad. These kids don't have fun stories about their dad. These kids were raised by Ivana.
Oh.
And I doubt that they had anything to do with him until they got old enough to be brought into the business.
Probably.
Because that's what it sounded like to me.
Yeah.
It sounded like all of the things that they, like, the fun stories they had were about being in business with him.
Yeah.
They weren't like the time my dad picked me up after I fell off my bike.
Yeah.
They were like the time my dad brought me into the company and introduced me to the lunch. You know, it was like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then Ivanka gives her speech. And this is the one that we're supposed to be wowed by because she's the golden child. She's the chosen one.
This was really weird.
It was really weird.
Because
first of all...
You and I were texting each other during this, and we were like, what is happening right now?
Because she introduced him, which is usually the wife that does this, but Ivanka is sort of being the wife in this scenario. She basically introduced Bernie Sanders.
Right, exactly. And she
to the point that I texted Brent, is Donald Trump her father?
I know.
She kept being like, my father is a man who blah, blah,
because
blah, blah.
And she even said... She even said at the very beginning of it, she was like, you know, I've had hard times in the past deciding whether I was going to vote for a Republican or a Democrat. And I was like, really? Well, in this room?
Yeah,
like,
don't
that's
say
where
that.
You're gonna
that's
go?
Not
I,
the
I
right
know.
One.
I don't know about
well,
that.
Well, she had but to then... because she was about to talk about paid family leave, equal pay for women, affordable child care, gay rights. I mean, first of all, I want to talk for a moment about the fact that getting rid of the gay rights or the sort of anti-gay rights platform got two standing ovations in that room.
I know.
Something weird's happening in that party. Because Peter Thiel got up and delivered a very confusing speech where he said a lot of crazy shit and then said he's a gay man who's proud to be a Republican and that he thinks that these are distraction tactics.
Yeah.
And that got a standing ovation.
But the platform, man. I mean...
No, the platform is like fucking medieval.
It's worse. Remember a couple
it's
weeks ago...
It's worse than 2012. I know.
Our last podcast, we were like, what's going to happen with
this?
It's
gotten very confusing.
It's,
sorry. I'm going to talk about that again in a second, but that was just a side note because she mentioned that.
Yeah.
Then she introduces Donald Trump.
Yes.
And then tweets a link to the dress she was wearing because it's from her own clothing line and made in China.
Yeah. Made in China.
Yeah,
by the
made in China. That's what I said. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I swallowed that.
Just to
be
clear.
Right. That's a dress that is made in China.
Correct.
Much like Trump's ties and his entire Macy's collection.
Right. Which is interesting for him.
Very interesting. But also not so surprising.
Not so much. Yeah.
He delivers the most insane, scaremongery speech claiming to be the Law and Order candidate that I have
it was the
heard
loudest,
in my lifetime.
Most
he's red-faced, he's sweating.
Screechy, weird, and long. The reason that it was so long was partially because it was just long.
Right.
And also partially because he was screaming the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the cadence of that, he could have picked up at least 10 or 15 minutes just
he is
with a
native New Yorker. I could have delivered that speech in half the time.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
In my own normal cadence.
Just with a different cadence. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It was a speech that was about everything and nothing. It was a speech that touched on all of his...
He kept saying he was going to say how he was going to do something. And then
I know.
Then
all,
never
I just
actually
sort of
say
kept,
the things
my
that he
whole
was
family
to.
Was standing around the TV screaming, "How? How?" Cuz he kept being like, "I'm going to make sure that criminals get off the streets and I'm going to make sure kids have quality educations
and
I'm going to
tell you how."
Right.
He would even say that.
He would say, "I'm going to tell you how," and then change the subject and not tell us how.
Never got back
to it. He never told us how he was going to do any of it. It was a laundry list of sometimes contradictory, crazy, rambling ideas that he has with no sort of like indication of how he planned to do any of it.
No.
It was really weird.
It was weird.
The other thing that was really weird was when he tried to say LGBTQ.
The Q really
He added
took
the Q
him.
Himself.
Did you hear that? No, I didn't.
It was written in the speech as LGBT, and he ad-libbed the Q.
Bless his heart, man.
I mean, I think at the time that he got to T, it had taken so long to get there.
I think I said to you, I think I texted you, everybody in the audience is currently trying to figure out what the Q is.
I know. Yeah.
Or I texted it to Grant.
No, you
I can't
texted
remember,
it to me.
But yeah, to you. Because I was like, I mean, he obviously didn't know what it was either.
He didn't know what any of the letters were. Because
but
every
I mean,
time
like,
he would be
The
ranting.
Audience was like, Q,
right, Q.
Head scratch.
Right. Like, but what was so weird, because the other thing that he ad-libbed in that speech is, I'm so glad to hear that we're getting away from that gay, anti-gay stuff.
Right. He was like, I'm yeah.
Which is interesting. Peter Thiel had already gotten a sort of half-standing ovation for saying, and this is something that I agree with too, by the way. I don't agree with Peter Thiel on much. I do agree with him that hating gays or abortion or any of these lifestyle issues are ultimately distraction tactics. They have nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
Nobody cares who you're sleeping with. It's right. not anyone's business, nor is it anyone's problem.
Right.
If you have an abortion, you, listener, are not affecting anyone else on earth except yourself.
Right.
These are all issues that distract us from voting according to the policies that actually matter in the political realm. Because in the political realm, it doesn't matter whether or not other people can marry as long as you can marry.
Right.
It doesn't matter whether or not other people are having abortions as long as you're not forced to have one. You know? These issues don't matter. And I think Donald Trump doesn't always agree with that because he's not a consistent candidate. So I'm not going to say that he is presenting this position. But it seems like in that moment, he thought to himself, this is an issue that we need to get away from. And when they polled young voters in that room, there weren't many. But when they talked to young voters in that room, not polled, but talked to, every single one of them said that they needed to stop caring so much about the gay thing.
Great.
Young people don't care about the gay thing.
No.
It's not a concern of theirs. Young people want to cut off social services for people because they're assholes. They want to do a lot of things that Republicans want to do that are not helpful to humanity.
And there's no reason why you can't be pro-gay and also have that in your head at the same time.
Gayness has nothing to do with that.
Right.
Gays can be assholes too.
Right.
People who've had and not had abortions can also have bad ideas about foreign policy. I mean,
totally.
You know, these things are irrelevant to the political process.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is not representing a view of America that is divorced of, you know, of these lifestyle issues.
No.
But he is sort of interestingly bringing the conversation around in a way that both troubles me because
I
feel like it's sort of creating, it's sort of taking prejudice from one place and placing it somewhere else. Like, he's certainly not the anti-prejudice candidate.
No.
I would never suggest that. But he does seem to be sort of weary of having to talk about gay issues.
Yeah.
And he does, it seemed like in that room there were people who agreed.
I agree, totally.
He got a standing ovation for that comment. And I think half of them didn't know what they were standing for because by that point they were so riled up on fear of
on
terrorism
law
or law and order.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was interesting to see that.
Yeah.
I think that they are about to have a crisis over the Southern strategy their original Southern strategy, which was to get poor white people to vote for them on the basis of scaring them about lifestyle issues that had nothing to do with anything.
Right. And specifically, one of them might be racism.
But certainly one of them still is racism.
Yes.
And that's not one Trump's interested in tackling at the moment.
It's not. But Steve King is.
Steve King is.
Yes.
Yeah. In a
the dear old Iowa, Steve King.
Good old Western. Iowan.
Yeah.
I'm learning about Iowa geography.
Sure.
I'm trying, you know?
Yeah.
I flew over Iowa today, and I thought to myself, I'm flying over Iowa.
Yeah.
Then I stopped thinking that.
Waved at Steve King.
That's right.
Yeah.
He was on a panel discussion on MSNBC on Monday evening. I don't know why you invite Steve King to a panel discussion, but okay.
Sure.
Carry on, MSNBC.
Yeah, right.
Where he suggested that white people have contributed more to civilization than any other categories or, quote, subgroups of people.
Subgroups.
That segment devolved
went off the
fast.
Rails. Yep.
Reels fast.
Reels fast.
As it should have.
Yeah.
Chris Hayes was the host.
Yeah.
And was like, excuse me.
I know.
Like, Chris Hayes was like not really sure what to do with this comment.
Yeah.
But Steve King said, I'd ask you to go back through history and figure out where have these contributions been made by these other categories of people that you're talking about? Where did any other subgroup of people contribute more to civilization?
And Chris Hayes was like, than white people?
And then King says, than Western civilization itself that's rooted in Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and the United States of America. First of all, the United States of America is not like, we're like 200 years old. We're not like responsible for civilization on Earth.
No.
We copied another civilization.
Correct.
Like, whatever.
Yeah.
And every place where the footprint of Christianity settled the world.
Sure, that's really what he's getting at.
Now,
that's
here's the thing. Math was the creation of a non-Christian society. And in fact, I believe if you look back, you'll find that the Muslim people that you're so interested in denigrating have a lot more to do with the history of math as we know
they really do.
Than Christians do.
Yes, they really do.
So that's interesting to me because every technological advance that has been made in quote-unquote Western society is rooted in ideas that came out of the Middle East and, you know, the and sort of Asia and a bunch of other places that are not Western, Eastern Europe, and America.
And then Chris Hayes, at that point, was like, we're not going to debate Western civilization here,
thankfully,
which is probably not the place to do it.
It's the right
idea.
And
then he went to break.
Right.
And he, I heard him say later, actually, that he wished that he wouldn't have gone to break. Because they had somebody there
who could have refuted this.
And I think ultimately did when they came
back. By the way, anyone who's been to like second grade history class can refute this point.
I know. Yeah,
if you've studied world history for for a month.
Yeah.
No, a day, a week.
Right.
I mean, an hour.
But do you wonder whether he realized the error of his ways?
I do, Brent. Tell me.
Yeah, no, he didn't.
Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah, he really doubled down.
Yep.
Went all in. Because later in the week, he was asked on Wednesday, 2 days later, by the Washington Post, and he was quoted as saying, the idea of multiculturalism and that every culture is equal, that's not objectively true.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah.
He's really just going for it.
A white supremacist.
White supremacist.
Just as we always suspected.
Right. And there's more of them, by the way.
I want someone to follow him around all day and point out things he's using or doing that were created by other cultures.
Well, one thing...
All day.
One thing that I can tell you he's appropriating is the Confederate flag. Because he's got one of those on his desk, and he is not from a Confederate state.
Let me tell you,
So the only reason a person from Iowa would have a Confederate flag on their desk
is they're white supremacists.
It's just outright racism.
Yeah. And like, because they believe black people should be slaves.
That's right. You don't have...
And you know what, Steve King? We're done with that. We moved on from that. Unfortunately, we're trying to move on from that more than we have.
Right.
Unfortunately, we're stuck not moving on as much as we'd like.
Right, because we still have David Duke
Because we still have fucking David Duke on our hands. And we still have police just casually shooting black people. More of that to come.
Yeah.
But speaking of racism.
Yep.
David Duke is going to run for Senate.
Yes.
So he's back, you guys.
The former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan.
Mm-hmm.
That guy.
Going to run for Senate in Louisiana.
Right. David Vitter's
seat. Defend the rights of European Americans.
That's right.
His definition of European Americans, oddly limited. One of the groups he doesn't include is Jewish Americans, who, for the most part, certainly in America, are almost exclusively from Europe.
That's
but fine.
Very true. Yeah.
I grant you that as a white supremacist, you're often not into Jews, and that's fine. He's also trying to stand up to interest groups such as African Americans, Mexican Americans.
Ah, those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said thousands of special interest groups stand up for African Americans, Mexican Americans, Jewish Americans, etc. This was a YouTube video. And he said, the fact is that European Americans need at least one man in the United States, one man in Congress, who will defend their rights and heritage.
So is having almost exclusively white men in both the Senate and Congress
not enough? No, it's not doing enough.
Is having the fact that most governors and most local representatives are also white men not enough?
Yeah.
No one's defending the rights of European Americans, you guys.
Yeah. And he had actually...
What about the poor German people?
I know. And Duke had previously said that he had praised Trump's candidacy, like back in March, I think. And Trump didn't really go all in on his denouncement of that as early as people thought that he should have. And then he ultimately did. And so people immediately were like,
hey, Trump. Yeah.
What do you got here? What do you got? And he kind of, sort of denounced it.
And
a little bit.
And he also said he might support the Democrat in that
race. But he said depending on who the person is.
Right.
It wasn't
so
as...
he might be forced to support David Duke.
He might be. Yes.
Louisiana is a fascinating place.
I have a feeling whoever the Democratic candidate is in Louisiana is going to be a person
that Donald Trump
that
could
Donald
support.
Trump will be able to support.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that Mary Landrieu's?
Yeah, he could support Mary Landrieu.
Yeah. Say like that's yeah.
Yeah.
And then in final news, and because we hate international news and we've been going on for too long, we're just going to quickly remind you that terrorism is everywhere.
It's truly everywhere.
And I don't mean that in the Donald Trump be scared way. You shouldn't, don't be scared. Be active and present and think, how can we solve this?
Right.
Maybe it's to not go to war so much in the Middle East. Maybe it's to stop marginalizing people. I mean, there's a lot of ways we could work towards this.
Yes.
Maybe it's to talk to your friends and family about how white supremacy is not the right choice. I mean, there's
so many things
you could do.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a very disturbing another shooting of an unarmed black man in North Miami.
Yep.
Who, like, literally this guy was a therapist who had an autistic patient who kind of made a run for it.
On the ground with his hands up.
Yeah, the guy, someone had called the police because this autistic patient was carrying what they said was a weapon, but was actually a toy truck.
Right. I was going to say toy gun. It wasn't even a toy
gun.
It was a toy truck.
By the way, if you're a policeman and someone calls you and says someone's carrying a gun, then go in there thinking maybe this guy has a gun. Sure, I get it. For your own safety. You should identify that it is a gun before you start shooting to begin with.
This is how we got there. Wasn't this the Tamir Rice situation?
Yeah, it was a toy gun. He had a toy gun. Right. He was a 12-year-old with a toy gun.
Right.
You know how many people... I had toy guns as a kid. Never once got shot.
Nope.
Someone had called the police and been like, there's a young white girl running around with a toy gun. The police would have laughed in their fucking faces.
Right.
In any case, the guy who got shot, though, was his therapist and was saying, I am his therapist. This man is autistic. I am just trying to get him help.
Right, I have my hands up.
The images that got taken of this were of him lying on the ground with his hands up.
Oh.
And he got shot anyway. He lived. And so when he told the story, he basically said, he asked the cop, why did you shoot me? And the cop said, I don't know. Then they keep trying to backpedal as if the cop accidentally shot him.
Right, they don't have, like, don't they, like, not have the footage of, like, the
They don't
actual,
have the footage
like,
of the actual,
actual shooting.
But they have footage of the man lying on the ground with his hands up.
Hands up.
Next to an autistic man playing with a toy truck.
Yeah.
That's not a danger to society,
no,
you guys.
It's not.
We don't need to shoot people in those situations.
No. No.
We shouldn't even be thinking we're going to shoot. Like, our gun, once the guy only has a toy truck,
there's no need to put
your gun away.
You don't have to bring a gun to that party.
No. No. That's crazy. That's madness. In any case, there was a police shooting in Baton Rouge, the second police shooting.
Right,
the police shooting situation is complicating the discussion if you're a Republican. I don't think it's complicating the discussion as much if you're a Democrat, because you can be categorically against people shooting people for no reason.
You can.
And you're also able to understand that police shooting unarmed black people for no reason is bad, and it is also bad to shoot cops for no reason. It's really bad to shoot anyone for no reason.
Correct. Yeah.
And one way that we could stop cops from being shot for no reason is to stop everyone having high-grade weaponry in their homes.
Correct.
And that's, I mean, to be fair, a lot of police unions are, and police departments are in favor of gun control for this very reason.
Right.
A lot, there are police departments who are not, who I think must have death wishes. But for the most part, the police understand that these gun control, this lack of gun control makes their jobs very dangerous. And I think it's partly why they're so trigger happy all the time.
Probably.
I mean, because I'd be fucking terrified.
Scared if that
I
everybody has a gun.
If I were in an open carry state and I were a policeman, I'd be fucking terrified. And if I were also racist on top of that, no wonder people are shooting black people everywhere. Like, we need them to not be racist, for one.
Right.
Then we
need
also
to,
need them
to not
have to think a gun is around every corner.
Right.
There's two parts to this problem. Both solvable, by the way.
Yeah.
Both solvable.
Simply.
Then there was a terrorist attack in Nice. There was a terrorist attack in Munich.
Munich.
Both of these interesting because they share more with this sort of American lone wolf style attack than they do with traditional, you know, like Islamic militant terrorism.
Yeah.
So these are both people that were initially thought to be allied with Islamic movements.
The classic lone wolf, if you will.
But this guy in Munich was literally like an 18 or 19 year old guy who, like many mass murderers before him in America, had a bunch of literature in his home about how to commit a mass murder and just went and mowed down some people at a McDonald's.
Yeah.
Now in Nice, it was 14 juillet. It was Bastille Day.
Bastille Day. Right.
And they...
Nicely done. by the way.
Thanks. I couldn't remember the name Bastille Day, and I was like, I know it's called 14 Juillet. And then I was like, I better just say that so I don't stop talking. But this guy took like an 18-wheeler, like a big truck, and mowed down a crowd that was there to see the fireworks. It was very grisly. There was the death toll was something like 85 or something. It was pretty bad.
Terrible.
And so terrorism, especially in Europe, where I was during all of this,
was not...
Although, I had to remind myself while I was there that one of the things that you have to sort of remember about why France is being targeted in a lot of these, and not as much Germany in the sense that Germany was sort of trying to colonize the Middle East, but just in terms of their international influence, is France has a lot of disenfranchised Muslim people. And so these sort of lone wolf attacks are not a crazy notion there, not because Muslim people commit lone wolf attacks as a rule.
Right, of course.
But because Muslim people, and specifically Tunisian people there, are very disenfranchised and sort of unappreciated within French society. French society is not that welcoming to those unlike them as a whole,
which
you might know if you'd been to France, because they won't let you speak French to them.
And this is why so many people are talking about Frexit.
Right, exactly.
Because they have always had more of a reason to, or they have always thought anyway. When you pull leaving the EU in France, it pulls better than it ever did in Britain
As I was in Barcelona, I had to be like, you know who never invaded Tunisia? Catalonia.
Right, sure. Yes, you know? Exactly.
So I had to sort of be like, France is both dealing with an international problem here, but this is in many ways a domestic problem as well in France that they have to work out politically themselves. And so the reason these are happening in these specific places, much like they happen in the US, you know, if you have rhetoric that demonizes a group of people, then the same kind of guy who becomes like a nutso lone wolf shooter who's white in America can be of any race, and that person can commit a mass shooting for any reason. And all it takes is the ideology that isolates them.
Right.
It doesn't matter if the ideology is Islam, or if the ideology is white supremacy, or if the ideology is nutso craziness, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's just the isolation that does it.
Right.
And so that's what we saw with these attacks that was different than what we saw in Paris, or you know, that we've seen in the past in some of these situations.
Yep.
In any case, that's the news this week. You guys,
stay
tuned, because the DNC is going to be exciting.
We're going to try and maybe do some
midweek
things, you know, as we go.
Yeah, and on the last night of the DNC, we might post like a mini podcast that we'll then summarize in the regular podcast.
Right.
But if you want to hear our unfiltered thoughts, try to tune into that one too.
Yeah.
And until then,
bye.
Happy watching.
Yes.
Bye.